Fascism, What It Is and How to Fight It, by Leon Trotsky. Read by Dessaline. Pamphlet Contents. Section 1. 1969 Introduction by George Lavin Weissman. Section 2. Fascism, What Is It? Section 3. How Mussolini Triumphed. Section 4. The Fascist Danger Looms in Germany. Section 5. An Aesop Fable. Section 6. The German Cops and Army. Section 7. Bourgeoisie, Petit Bourgeoisie, and Proletariat. Section 8. The Collapse of Bourgeois Democracy. Section 9. Does the Petty Bourgeoisie Fear Revolution? Section 10. The Workers' Militia and Its Opponents. Section 11. The Perspective in the United States. Section 12. Build the Revolutionary Party. "1969 Pamphlet Introduction" by George Lavin Weissman. Liberals, and even most of those who consider themselves Marxists, are guilty of using the word fascist very loosely today. They fling it around as an epithet or a political swear word against right-wing figures whom they particularly despise, or against reactionaries in general. Since World War II, the fascist label has been applied to such figures and movements as Gerald L.K. Smith, Senator Joseph McCarthy, Senator Eastland, Barry Goldwater, the Minutemen, the John Birch Society, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and George Wallace. Now, were all these fascists, or just some? If only some, then how does one tell which are and which aren't? Indiscriminate use of the term really reflects vagueness about its meaning. Asked to define fascism, the liberal replies in such terms as dictatorship, mass neuroses, anti-Semitism, the power of unscrupulous propaganda, the hypnotic effect of a mad genius orator on the masses, etc. Impressionism and confusion on the part of liberals is not surprising. But Marxism's superiority consists of its ability to analyze and differentiate among social and political phenomena. That so many of those calling themselves Marxists cannot define fascism any more adequately than the liberals is not wholly their fault. Whether they are aware of it or not, much of their intellectual heritage comes from the social democratic, i.e. reformist socialist, and Stalinist movements, which dominated the left in the 1930s when fascism was scoring victory after victory. These movements not only permitted Nazism to come to power in Germany without a shot being fired against it, but they failed abysmally in understanding the nature and dynamics of fascism and the way to fight it. After fascism's triumphs, they had much to hide and so refrained from making a Marxist analysis, which would, at least, have educated subsequent generations. But there is a Marxist analysis of fascism. It was made by Leon Trotsky, not as a post-mortem, but during the rise of fascism. This was one of Trotsky's great contributions to Marxism. He began the task after Mussolini's victory in Italy in 1922, and brought it to a high point in the years preceding Hitler's triumph in Germany in 1933. In his attempts to awaken the German Communist Party and the Communist International, i.e. the Comintern, to the mortal danger and to rally a united front against Nazism, Trotsky made a point-by-point critique of the policies of the Social Democratic and Stalinist parties. This constitutes a compendium of almost all the mistaken, ineffective, and suicidal positions that workers' organizations can take regarding fascism. Since the positions of the German parties ranged from opportunistic default and betrayal on the right, i.e. social democratic, to ultra-left abstentionism and betrayal, i.e. Stalinist. The community movement was still on its ultra-left binge, the so-called third period, when the Nazmi movement began to snowball. To the Stalinists, every capitalist party was automatically fascist. Even more catastrophic than this disorienting of the workers was Stalin's famous dictum that, rather than being opposites, fascism and social democracy were twins. The socialists were thereupon dubbed social fascists and regarded as the main enemy. Of course, there could be no united front with social fascist organizations, and those who, like Trotsky, urged such united fronts were also labeled social fascists and treated accordingly. How divorced from reality the Stalinist line was may be illustrated by recalling its translation into American terms. In the 1932 elections, American Stalinists denounced Franklin Roosevelt as the fascist candidate and Norman Thomas as the social fascist candidate. What was ludicrously as applied to U.S. politics was tragic in Germany and Austria. Recently, 1969, the term social fascism had begun cropping up in articles by members of the New Left. Do those using it imagine that they have invented the term? Or if they are aware of its history, are they indifferent to its connotations? After the Nazis came to power, the Stalinists boasted that their line had been 100% correct, that Hitler could only last a few months, and that a Soviet Germany would then emerge. The time limit for this miracle was extended from 3, 6 to 9 months, and then the idle boast dwindled into silence. The magnitude of the defeat suffered by the working class, the special character of fascism, distinguishing it from other reactionary regimes or dictatorships, became apparent to all, and the threat to the Soviet Union or a rearmed German imperialism began to take on reality. This brought about a change in Moscow's line in 1935, and the Communist parties throughout the world thereupon zigzagged far to the right even of the Social Democrats. This was their stance in the face of the spreading fascist danger in France and in Spain. The military ruin of German and Italian fascism in World War II convinced most people that fascism had been destroyed for good and was so utterly discredited that it could never again entice any followers. Events since then, particularly the emergence of new fascist groups and tendencies in almost every capitalist country, have dispelled such wishful thinking. The illusion that World War II was fought to make the world safe from fascism has gone the way of the earlier illusion that World War I was fought to make the world safe for democracy. The germ of fascism is endemic in capitalism. A crisis can raise it to epidemic proportions unless drastic countermeasures are applied. Since forewarned is forearmed, we offer this new compilation, a small selection from Trotsky's writings on the subject, as a weapon for the anti-fascist arsenal. End of introduction.